Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Whether it's auto, home, life, business, you go to the insurance professionals. They'll find you the right insurance so you're covered. They'll work hard to get you the absolute best price. And if you need them for anything, they're right there. Phone call away, and they will pick up, and they will take care of any question or claim that you have immediately. That's Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Our play-by-play call today, Merrill & Company out on the coast watching the Eagles win.
Smallwood to the left of Foles. Foles gives it to Smallwood. Up the middle it goes. He's in. Touchdown. His second of the night.
They built up a 30-13 lead. They won it 30-23, and it's 7-7. They're back in it. The Rams' three-week slump continues. Very pleased to be joined now by Nicole Auerbach. Nicole Auerbach with The Athletic and also BTN. Nicole, welcome. It's great to have you with us on the show today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, you wrote the article last week about the expansion from 4 to 8 and to get comments on what people thought about it. Were there any surprises to you in the interviews that you conducted?
Well, yeah. I mean, I really thought initially, going into this until I started talking to people, that this wouldn't have gotten the type of push, you know, and again, it's informal conversations, hoping to get to that stage to have formal conversations. I thought that would really only have happened if Georgia had gotten into the playoff again and you had a league get multiple teams in again. This year you'd have also had Notre Dame in the mix, which would have excluded three power conferences. But, you know, it didn't even require that to really get the ball rolling, because there are, you know, 5 years of selections and rankings that people are seeing and frustrated with and ready to start talking about change. So I think just overall I was surprised that that push is coming, even without what I guess people were kind of say like a nightmare scenario, which would have been the two, you know, Alabama, Georgia, and Notre Dame all getting in.
Barry Alvarez has always been a guy that I personally felt can see the big picture, and I'll give everyone a quick example. When they were talking about forming a Big Ten hockey conference, Minnesota had always been in its conference, Wisconsin, Michigan State, they've all been in their conferences. And he said, no, this is best for everybody, so we're going to pull out and we're going to go to the Big Ten. He's always had that kind of perspective. What perspective did he give you, and how rock solid was he in his commentary?
Yeah, I mean, he is very influential in this. He was, you know, member of the College Football Playoff Selection Committee for the first three seasons of its existence. So he knows how hard it is, how it works, and he's obviously been in the Big Ten a very long time and is one of the most respected voices in the conference. So, yeah, when he says something and he says stuff like inevitable, you know, the expansion feels inevitable and everyone's talking about it, everyone's thinking this, I mean, that really does carry a lot of weight. And so I think, I think that's why people reacted so strongly to some of his comments. And also his, you know, kind of, you know, going to bat for UCF, I don't think, people expected that. And he did that unprompted to me. So, you know, I do think, people recognize that he is influential, particularly in this specific case, because he was involved in it and made those selections and helped determine which of those four teams went to the playoff to begin with. So, you know, it's certainly important, and he feels very strongly about it. And when Barry Alvarez feels strongly about something, you're going to hear about it.
Yeah, and he will look at the big picture. Now, when you looked at this, you mentioned UCF. That's certainly a factor. Two conference champions being left out, that's also a factor, but also the heavy Southeastern Conference, the heavy Southeast influence on this through 5 years. What kind of order would you put that in that concerns people the most after the interviews and the people you talk to?
Well, I think it's you know, the big picture thing, the two things that people are focusing on are the lack of, I guess, respect for conference champions. I think that, you know, when these compromises and conversations were happening to create the 14 field, you know, there was a lot of push from conference commissioners that conference champions needed to be valued a certain way, you know, and it's listed in the criteria, but it is not, it is basically listed to be used in cases of tiebreakers or when teams are really close and you're comparing them. And, you know, the people, there are prominent people in the Big 12 and the Big 10 that don't think that's necessarily how it's been applied. And I think, you know, you see that even this year with Georgia ranked ahead of Ohio State, not being a champion, ahead of Ohio State, the Big 10 champion, 5-6 in the rankings this year, you see that too. And it remains a concern. And then, you know, the other piece of that is strength of schedule. And if you look at the three conferences that have been left out multiple times, those are the three that play 9 conference games.
Right.
You have conferences like the Big Ten that really try to reduce the amount of FCS teams that their teams schedule. And so you see frustration that doesn't seem to help its teams. And in all three of those leagues, you know, you've had 2 lost champions that, you know, have had cases to be made and can't get into the playoff. And then, you know, it's still the clearest way to get to the playoff is that you go undefeated or have just 1 loss. And, you know, it's easier to do that when you're playing less conference games because of the familiarity there. And so, you know, those are the 2 sticking points that I heard a lot from a lot of different people. And then, you know, I think UCF comes into play when people are, like Barry Alvarez, are thinking about the potential format for what the expanded playoff could look like, because I don't think you would necessarily have people like Barry Alvarez supporting, you know, an 8-team model that includes a group of 5 champion spot designated if you didn't have a team like UCF really kind of, you know, making people think about the group of 5 and the really talented teams that can come out of there a certain way over the last 2 years.
Obviously, the 2 conferences that have 8, that play 8 conference games have been in all 5. You mentioned the 9 conference games that are played in the Pac-12, the Big 12, and the Big 10, and how there's been a rotation of missing out. But there's another part, too, about non-conference. I got the impression early on that non-conference was supposed to mean something. With Washington got in 2 years ago, and their toughest non-conference opponent was Rutgers. What kind of message do you think that sent to everyone?
Right, that did send a message, and again, it's that the teams that thought these things were going to matter are not seeing it rewarded when they do challenge each other or themselves, and they do see teams that are not challenging themselves in the part of the schedule they can control, like the non-conference, you know, be rewarded for that, because again, the easiest way to get in still is to be undefeated or 1 loss, which isn't all that different from the BCS system. Where, you know, it was way more damaging to lose than it was to play a tough team. And so, you know, you see that, and you see it in a way that's different than when we talk about the college basketball selection committee, because they're actually able to reward and incentivize scheduling because they adhere to it. And they literally leave people out who don't schedule a certain way. And they, when they talk about seeding and bracketing and they go through all of this, they explain that this team is on this seed line because of this reason for their scheduling. And they actually incentivize going on the road, playing tough opponents, playing neutral site games. It's built into the formula, and it's the way that they can communicate with coaches and athletic directors. The college football playoff hasn't done that, because they can say all they want about strength of schedule, but their actions are not showing that they are rewarding or looking at a 2-loss champion that had a more challenging schedule over a 1-loss non-champion or an undefeated non-champion because of the way that they're not pointing out and actually adhering to different strength of schedule measures. They could do that. They could signal that. They could explain it as the rationale for including, you know, a 2-loss conference champ from the Big Ten over Alabama last year. You could do things like that, but they haven't done them yet. So therefore, you know, they're really not sending the signals that people expected, and people tried to schedule a certain way in order to anticipate that it would be rewarded for challenging yourself, and it's not happened. So that is a big frustration for people, you know, across the board and across those 3 conferences that, A, already have a tougher conference schedule, and B, when you're trying to limit FCS opponents or require at least 1 Power 5 opponent in non-conference, that's only really hurting you because you're going to have another loss on your resume, and it's not necessarily hurting teams that are scheduling that. And multiple people pointed out Florida to me this year, which had two FCS wins on their schedule, and they still got into a New Year's Six Bowl over Penn State, over Washington State. And, you know, that just speaks to all of this, that playing FCS, playing eight conference games, these things are not being held against the teams that are doing it.
Alabama's last non-conference road game was Penn State in 2011. Just for a point of fact, I know Bill Hancock gave you the standard answer about the college football playoff. I read it. I saw it. If I'm sitting in his position, I give you the exact same answer because that's the position I'm sitting in. Did you get any indication from anybody as to when they would like to revisit this, because this is a 12-year deal?
Right. The people who I spoke to, both on the record and on background, they do want this to be a conversation soon. They want it to get to the point of formal conversations, get it on the agenda, have the right people in the right rooms discussing it. And they want that to happen before the end of the 12-year contract, which is up in 2026. So, you know, people are kind of focusing on 2020 as the midpoint of the deal, and the fact that, you know, all of the semifinals and their contracts, like the Sugar Bowl and the Rose Bowl, all would have cycled through two times by then. That's really soon. And, you know, these conversations take a long time to get to that point where you can make changes. As we know with the playoff, it took years to get to the point where they even got to the four-team format. So, you know, I just think essentially right now there's informal conversations happening all over, and they want it to get to formal conversations. But yeah, they do not want to wait until 2026 to make a change here. So it's going to be interesting, you know, to follow this over the coming weeks and months to see, you know, if that push can get to the point of formal conversation soon.
I know you have to get going, but I just want to slip in one more question. I had somebody on that does a lot of work with the business of sports. College football right now, according to him, is a hot, hot buy. And the corporate partners he deals with would really love to see the move from 4 to 8. Does money eventually play a role in some of these decisions?
Oh, I think money definitely does. And, you know, that's part of why it's frustrating for these power conferences to be left out of the, you know, their slice of the pie multiple times. I think that that's going to factor into this. I'm sure that, you know, the power brokers of the sport, you know, have talked to people about that and what this could be worth. I think, you know, there's a reason that fans responded to the idea of an expanded playoff the way they did last week, because there is a lot of interest in it. And I think, you know, the people who can make this decision ultimately, they do realize that, and they do know that this could be lucrative. This could, you know, be just a different system and a good system for them. And fans want it, and maybe TV partners want it. If you have, you know, potentially on-campus quarterfinals, that would be, you know, obviously sellouts and a lot of attention. So I think there's a lot of pros to this, and I think that the people who are going to be ultimately, you know, trying to force this conversation and have those compromises and debates and, you know, discussions are, you know, thinking about all of those things, especially including the money.
Yeah, and the on-campus thing's the Chuck Nines part, but I know you've got to get running. I appreciate the time you gave us today. Happy holidays to you and yours.
All right, thanks. Happy holidays to you, too.
Nicole Auerbach joining us from The Athletic and also from BTN. Appreciate her time very much today. We'll take a break. We'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by our good friends at Purdy Insurance. For nearly 100 years, Purdy Insurance has been your locally owned, family-operated source for insurance products. With a staff of over 20 and partnerships with some of the industry's most trusted companies, Purdy has the experience and resources to get the job done. Whether you need personal, home, and auto, or complex business insurance solutions, Purdy will help you navigate through the process. Call today at 570-286-5855, or better yet, stop in their Sunbury office to see what Purdy Insurance can do for you. The Chuck Nines proposal that she did not reference Chuck by name, but the Chuck Nines proposal that was in her article is to play the quarterfinal games on campus sites, championship weekend, the first Saturday in December, and then get the college football playoff participants out of that. That's his proposal. Chuck is about as savvy a guy as college sports has seen. I have great respect for Chuck Nines. Not a little, great respect for Chuck Nines. But Nicole also, we kind of stretched that to almost 12 minutes. We only had a 10-minute window with her, but she was kind enough to take the last question there because I wanted to get into the money part of it. I was going to ask her about the Celebration Bowl, but I mean, that usually ends up an hour four. So, stop laughing.
So for those who had never heard of the name Chuck Ninus before, how big does that name, weigh into this deal?
In the early 80s, it was Chuck Ninus as the head of the College Football Association, the CFA, who, along with Joe Paterno, put together the first television contracts that would open the door for what we see in television today. Chuck and Joe worked hand-in-hand with the CFA, and they actually put together a contract with NBC to have college football games on NBC. They put the contract together. Well, out of that was an offshoot of a lawsuit Oklahoma and Georgia had with that went all the way to the Supreme Court. And in 1984, that suit was settled in favor of Georgia and Oklahoma about them having their own television rights. And so the initial college football playoff contract, which never came to fruition because now they decided to wait out this court case, which ultimately opened the door for all the college football you see today. Ninus was brilliant when it came to that, and Joe was brilliant when it came to that. That's why when I talk about the Eastern All-Sports Conference that Joe was trying to put together, and I've talked about, hey, look, in the end, pick and blame Penn State all at once. It was their 80s administration's fault because they didn't have the foresight and the big picture knowledge that Joe had. And Joe kept trying to tell them what he had, and they weren't buying into it, and they just thought they could go to the Big East, not go into a conference with Penn State, and go on. But Joe had all this information because he and Ninus were negotiating all this. And they knew what the potential was going to be. See, that's what separated the Dave Gavitts, the Chuck Ninuses, and the Joe Paternos from so many others. They could see the big picture. They were willing to take the time to negotiate it out. Gavitt formed the Big East because he knew what it would mean to organize Eastern basketball. Joe knew what college football would mean by organizing the East in conjunction with the TV contracts he was helping Chuck Ninus to negotiate. So that's who it is. Quick word on Central Florida on UCF. There is a story out of Florida that UCF turned down a 2-for-1 offer from Florida. Play two games in Gainesville for one in Orlando. This is one of the more incredibly short-sighted decisions I've seen someone in athletics make in a while. UCF wants to be considered, quote, among the big guys in college football. UCF is frustrated they are not perceived as one of the big guys in college football. UCF hasn't lost a game since some point in the 2016 season. They went through 2017 undefeated, including a win over Auburn at the end. They went through this past season undefeated. Yet the highest they can get is eighth in the poll. They declare themselves some faux national champion and have them up on their press box because they were undefeated last year. Well, you aren't the national champion. You didn't make the tournament. And now you see them make decisions such as these, or we're good enough, it should be a one-for-one deal. No, you're not. And I'm not saying you're not good enough. The perception is you don't have the collateral to look at somebody and say that we're on equal footing, we won't do it. You don't have that. This is what they need to do. They want to be taken seriously on the landscape. And already as a program, people do take them seriously. But if you want to get yourself and change the perception of who you are, this is what you have to do. It's very simple. You have to do what Florida State did in the 70s and early 80s. When Bobby Bowden took over the Florida State football program, they were awful. They were 1-10, 1-10. I mean, that's what they were. Florida State was awful in the early 70s. Late 60s, early 70s, Florida State was awful. Bobby Bowden took over. And everyone's telling Bobby Bowden, hey, look, I'm telling you right now, it's... you know, you're not going to get any national respect. So you know what he did to change the perception of the national respect of Florida State? He started doing one for nones. We'll play you. We'll go to your place. Let's go to Michigan. We'll play you. You know, so Michigan never went back to Florida State. Okay? He went out to Nebraska. One, in fact, I think he went to Nebraska twice with no return. He went to Michigan, no return. He did this over and over again. All right? And guess what? They were winning. Why? Because he had enough confidence in his program, he could take them on the road and win with them. You know the story about the sod cemetery, right, John?
Mm-hmm.
Florida State has what's called the sod cemetery. Well, this is what the genesis of the sod cemetery is. Those games I just talked about, where they went someplace and they beat the team, they took a piece of the turf and they brought it back and put it in the sod cemetery. That's the story of it. That's what Central Florida needs to do. You want to change what can get you into the big boy playoff? Well, guess what? You're going to have to go out and take the Florida State model and go do it.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury, go to purdyinsurance.com. Purdy's have served this valley for decades. Why? Because they've been able to find their clients exactly the right insurance so they're covered. They've been able to get them the best price, which is essential. And whether it's auto, home, life, business, anytime there's a question, they get you the right answer promptly. And if there's a claim, they jump in and they act as if it happened to them because they're your partner in all of this. It's Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. I was talking about Florida State before. When Bobby Bowden took over, Florida State had been 4-29. 4-29 in their last 33 games when he took over. And then Bowden went 5-6 his first year. And Bobby had a good run, obviously, at West Virginia before all of this. But they weren't afraid to go out and just say, hey, look, we'll play you. Okay? We'll play you. If it's one, then that's it. We'll play you. And that was essential to what they did. We'll play you. Well, we're not going to go back to your place. Don't have to. We'll go to your place. We'll win. You know, and the sod cemetery is, you know, they kept throwing more wins into the old sod cemetery. Well, that's what UCF has to do. And don't give me this, we're equal partners. Okay? Maybe on the field you are, but not in perception. In perception, you are not even remotely considered to be a, quote, equal partner where you're going to get one for one. You take your two for one and you go to their place and you beat them.
You show them why you're a really good team. You show them why you're a great program. In other words, just look at them and say, you know, because right now, not playing them and being stubborn about it gets you nowhere. It, you know, and that's what they're going to find out. It's going to get them nowhere. And that's the problem. That's the problem they have. That's why, well, they turned out a 2-for-1. Take the 2-for-1. Walk into their place twice and beat them twice. And everybody go, whoa. Wow.
What got me to thinking of the conversation you had a few weeks back with David Jones when we were, you know, before the all the bowl games were announced. And yeah, how great would it be if we could have seen a UCF Florida bowl game?
All right. Well, that's up to the College Football Playoff Committee to set those things up.
Sure.
And you know, and I've talked about this over and over again. I think for the most part they do a very good job, but so many times I don't quite get what they're doing. I mean, they have an opportunity to do something like that. Won't do it. Won't do it. And that become, to me, that starts to become a real issue. Let's see. Florida State, 1979. Let's play Arizona State. Let's play Miami. Let's see, at Louisville's no big deal. At LSU. Okay? Okay, that's what they did that particular year. Okay, let's go to, that's the 79 season. 80. 1980. They play at LSU for a second straight year. They play at LSU. They play at Nebraska. Oh, by the way, they won both those games. Okay, they're trying to get traction here with what they're doing. So back-to-back years, they play at LSU. Then they play at Nebraska. Now you go to 81. Florida State plays at Nebraska for a second straight year. They play at Ohio State. They play at Notre Dame. Third straight year, they play at LSU. Okay? This is why I'm talking about the Florida State model. And we're going to get to Matt Leon here in a second, which I will. Okay, now we go to 1982. 1982, second straight year, they play at Ohio State. Fourth straight year, they play at LSU. See what he's doing here? This is what Bobby Bowden did. I have great respect for what he did. Fifth straight year at LSU. Play at Auburn. At Arizona State. That's 83. Let's go quickly to 84. 1984. Florida State plays. Anybody have known on the road? At Arizona State, which was pretty good at the time. At South Carolina. Nothing of real note. They did play Auburn at home that year. 85. See, now they're getting to be really good here at this point. Come on, go to 85 here. There we go. 85. At Nebraska, third time. At Auburn again. That was a 2-for-1. See, I mean, they were doing these things. You notice they're not going back to Doak Campbell Stadium. 86. At Nebraska again, fourth straight time. At Michigan. This is what they did. They wanted to garner some respect, so they went out and they decided to schedule their own respect. At Michigan State. At Auburn again. I'll do one more here. I'll go up to 88. Okay? Because I know we've got to get the mat here. 88. See, I'm not including the at Miami's and at Florida's, things like that. So 88 was a more normal schedule. But you see what I'm talking about? Ohio State never went down there. Michigan State never went down there. Michigan didn't go down there. Nebraska didn't go down there. LSU didn't go down there. They went to LSU five straight years. Auburn was 3-for-1. Right? This guy, oh, no, we got to play them on even terms. Grow up, man. Know who you are. Go out and prove your worth. Go to them. Beat them. Take your guaranteed money and go home with the cash and a win. That's how UCF has to do it. That is not savvy leadership on the part of UCF. All right, Matt Leon joins us. Matt, oh, what a great win for the Eagles. Great to have you with us again.
Oh, well, thank you very much. It was a great game. So it was hard not to channel the energy that was in that building the whole night. It was something else.
Well, you were fantastic. You made it, you brought real life to it. Great job.
Thank you.
I want to get to the Eagles last night. They went in as a double-digit underdog. Foles is a quarterback, so here we go. It's a repeat of last year. Let's start with Jim Schwartz defensively. I know the Rams are slumping, and it seemed like he took advantage of that slump last night.
Yeah, they did a great job defensively. They got great pressure on Jared Goff. A ton of sacks. I think they only finished with one, but they constantly harassed him, made him throw off rhythm. And, you know, as Chris Collinsworth pointed out a lot during the broadcast, they kind of played that quarter sit-down coverage, kept everything in front of them, and kind of forced the Rams to nickel and dime themselves down the field, forced them to settle for some field goals. Also helped Todd Gurley got banged up. He didn't have nearly the same burst you're used to seeing Gurley have. But the Eagles defense played well. They kind of played a little bit similar. They played hard against Dallas. They gave up a lot more in terms of yardage and big plays against the Cowboys. You saw the same type of effort against the Rams, guys flying around the football and such. But they kept everything in front of them with the exception of the one pass that set up the Rams' last touchdown. And did a great job of tackling, didn't let the Rams really get momentum going until the final few minutes, and it was really an impressive performance. Once again, doing it with a banged-up secondary. They got Avante Maddox back, and that was big. Obviously had the interception, but also played every snap after missing the last few weeks, and his presence was key.
Now let's get to the offensive side of it, because with Nick Foles at quarterback, Alshon Jeffrey was more active last night. What kind of difference does that make in the Eagles' offense when they can get him going and not just Zach Ertz?
Well, I think it allowed them to really get chunk plays down the field. Even in the games, for the most part, that Jeffrey's been effective this year with Carson Wentz, it's been a lot more slant, bubble screen, not so much bubble screen, but quick hitters, let him make something happen. What you saw against the Rams last night was just big plays down the seam, especially the one big one, the 50-yarder that set up the go-ahead touchdown in the third quarter. But you didn't see Zach Ertz nearly as involved as you would become accustomed to. Now, I'm not smart enough to know if maybe that is something the Rams, you know, kudos to them.
Took it away.
Kind of hard to believe that teams keep letting Zach Ertz do what he's doing to them. So they might have been doing some things defensively that made that possible. But you also really got the feeling like it was a key for them to make sure they could get Jeffrey out. Success against Aqib Talib last year in a game against Denver. Looked like they thought they could exploit that matchup, and they really did. That was huge. I think he finished 8 for 160, and they were all big plays. And really, his play in the second and third quarters, especially when they were able to constantly get the ball downfield, is when you started thinking like, hey, you know what, this might not go the way we all kind of assumed it was going to go.
Are you surprised? I know there's only one ball, all right, but are you surprised that Golden Tate hasn't been more active and involved in a couple of things they're doing?
I am. It hasn't gotten talked about. It gets lost because it's such a big win and storylines. But even last night, I think he only played like 37% of the snaps. He's really only had one game. I guess it was the Redskins win. They all run together. But there was only one game where you really kind of felt like he was organically a part of what they were trying to do. He had a couple big catches last night. He converted at least one third down that I can remember. But you're right. He kind of seems like an extra piece that they keep trying to make room for and figure out how they want to use that. Now, in the big picture, I think we talked about this last week. I don't know what that's not a good sign for the offensive staff that you get a Pro Bowl-type player and you can't get him on the field for 100% of the snaps. But that's an argument for a different day right now. But, yeah, I am surprised. I thought by now it would be pretty seamless.
Yeah, I thought it would be, too. What about the running game? I mean, we've talked about this a couple of times. But Smallwood played well, a couple of touchdowns. Adams we've talked about before, but I don't know. How much of that was Smallwood in the offensive line, and how much was that with Rams tackling?
A little bit of both. I also think you got to credit Doug Peterson for sticking with the run.
Yeah.
There was actually a point halfway through the second quarter where I almost put up on Twitter, like, boy, who thought you'd see the day when you would be worrying if Doug Peterson was going to throw the ball enough? But I think that was a key to the big picture successes. They stuck with it. Smallwood ran hard. I don't think Adam was as successful as we've seen him. He came out of the game twice for two separate injuries. So he really, to kind of be there on the field. And also Terrence Sproles, not huge numbers, but he had a couple of big runs. And what I think when you look at the totality of the running back position now, this is what it's kind of going to be. 10 carries this guy, 8 this guy,
sure.
4 or 5 this guy. But I think the thing that I've liked the last couple weeks with Sproles is he looks really fast again. And he looks really where you kind of – and when he gets the chance to turn the corner or get the edge, you kind of hold your breath for a second because he has that look like he can still bring it at 35 years of age and take it to the house.
We talked about bringing it last night. Fletcher Cox brought it last night. I mean, he just flat out brought it.
Yeah, and this is a number. Everybody in Philadelphia held their collective breath because he got hurt. I think it was a hip thing in the first half.
Right.
And then he comes back in, and, you know, he is just literally throwing the Rams center back into Cox's lap with one arm. I mean, he is a monster, and he is obviously at that position, numbers don't do him justice, the impact he has on the game. Because you'll hear a lot of times people that – frankly, don't really know what they're talking about, saying, oh, Fletcher Cox only had one tackle, and why are they paying all this money? And you're just like, are you serious? Have you watched this? Do you see the resources an offense has to commit to him to just to keep him neutral? So, no, he was phenomenal. The whole defensive line, you know, Michael Bennett's been a phenomenal player this year. I think a lot of people thought he was just kind of going to be a third down guy, you know, out there every, you know, in definite passing situations. But he has been a start to finish, really picking up the slack for some other guys whose numbers are a little down this year. But no, it all starts with Fletcher Cox, and he was phenomenal.
Yeah, I haven't really been, for the most part, I've been very much behind Doug Peterson. The only time I really questioned anything with him was I thought at the end of the Dallas game he should have gone, in regulation, should have gone for two because he already had a defense that had given up over 500 yards. What are you going to rely on, a coin flip? I mean –
And yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah, and I think there's certain circumstances where you got to look at how the game played out as to how you make that decision. But I think his decision making last night was great. Now they got Houston, and then they've got the Redskins. They put themselves back into it.
Yeah, I think. I think they were at 14% chance to make the playoff last night going in, like 40. The one I saw, and that could probably go up tonight if Carolina loses, like I expect them to.
Right.
If Carolina loses tonight, then I think you kind of look at it as a two-horse race, you know, Vikings and Eagles.
Yeah.
And Eagles still need help, you know, but the Vikings schedule isn't cake. Detroit obviously has had their issues, but it's in Detroit. And then you kind of got that wild card game with the Bears where you don't quite know what the Bears are going to need to play for, a home field or a bye or something like that. If you're the Eagles, you obviously hope that they don't go into that game, you know, being locked into whatever position they end up being locked into playoff-wise. But the fact that, I mean, you know, let's talk 4 or 5 weeks ago when they get embarrassed in New Orleans. The fact that we're actually here the week before Christmas talking about legitimate Eagle playoff possibilities. I think you got to tip your hat to the staff, to the players, for continuing to fight and continuing to try to battle through.
Dave Hackstall gets fired as the Flyers head coach, the fifth coach in the NHL to get fired this year. And it looks like Scott Gordon, who's been in Allentown, is going to get the job. And he's coached in the NHL before with the Islanders. What were your thoughts on making the move?
Well, I think it's just Gordon for an interim. There have been a lot of talk about Joel Quenneville, and I wonder if that's not the guy they're looking to get. I read one report that Joel Quenneville is vacationing skiing, and that might be where this thing got all weird, where they can't get it. Either he said, wait till I'm back, or you know they have to wait to sit down and talk to him till then. I would be surprised if Gordon gets the job in the long run. I think this is just to kind of get them through, obviously, tomorrow night's game against Detroit and the short term here. But, Dave Hackstall, they never really got any better under him. You know, his entire tenure, I think it's really bottomed out here. That road trip after the win in Buffalo, they were pretty bad the rest of that trip. And you kind of had the feeling like something had to happen. And you know, when Hextall was let go, he kind of felt like maybe there could be something to come if he wasn't, if things didn't turn around. But yeah, they made the playoffs twice, but both times they made the playoffs, you never really felt like they were threat.
Right.
And, you know, this was the year they were supposed to take a big step forward, and they, you know, at best have just kind of held serve here. I mean, they're last in the Metropolitan Division. And other than, I think they had one run where they went 5-0-1 in six games. I mean, you take that away, and it's been a terrible, wretched season. So I think everybody kind of anticipated this. The Flyers are kind of all over the place on this. There was a report that broke from a credible reporter, one of the beat guys last night, that he was going to get fired.
Right.
Then they denied that up and down, and then Hextall doesn't show up at practice today. Then they announced it in a press release. So don't quite understand the logistics, but I think we all kind of figured this was coming.
Matt, always a pleasure. Thanks so much. And again, that Penn call with Villanova was outstanding.
Thanks so much. My pleasure. Happy holidays.
Hey, really, from us to you, happy holidays. We can't appreciate you enough for all the contributions you make to this show to make it better all the time. Thank you.
My pleasure. Take care.
All right, so should I tell the Emmy story?
Sure, we can wrap up with that. Why not?
So WPSU-TV won the Best Station Emmy Award. So they're trying to put together a presentation. They want every person in the station to have their picture taken with the Emmy. Okay, so everybody has gone through, and you know I've had the extended road trip, so I haven't been there. Right? I've been in and out. Whatever. And my contributions are, I'm the one that produces all the Roar features for the 20 shows that we do every year for football and basketball for Penn State. So there, of course, is one holdout that hasn't had their picture taken yet with the Emmy.
It's not like you're avoiding the building.
No, I mean, I was in there this morning. I was not there the day they took the pictures for everybody. I was on the road at, oh, I don't know where I was. I may have been at Maryland when they did it. Something. Okay? We really, really want you to get your picture taken with the Emmy. I said, all right. So tomorrow morning I'm going to do it. Guess which person finds out that I'm going to have my picture taken with the Emmy tomorrow?
Suteroni.
Guess what he wants?
He wants a copy of the photo.
To do what with it?
He wants to make sure there's enough distance between you and the award where he can take the award out and Photoshop himself in with you and him together.
No, he wants to crop me out. He wants to put himself in the picture with the Emmy Award.
Closest he'll get to that, right?
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.